Hello, hello. Just going to hold out for Madonna and Thomas to join us, and then we'll get started. But there's a bunch of new emojis for reactions, which is super awesome. So hopefully those work for everyone. Hey Madonna, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you doing today?
Awesome, I'm doing very well. I'm really glad it's Friday.
Me too. I don't know why now I feel like I always look forward to it being Friday. Love Fridays.
Oh yeah. All right, looks like Thomas is having a little bit of trouble, but we're gonna see if we can get him up here really quick.
Yes, I hope everybody's having a great Friday and doing something cool. I think the weather is also very nice today. It's here it's 52. Very nice. I mean, I love it.
It's pretty warm to here today as well, but we're dealing with a lot of wind, so it's still a bit of a wind chill.
Yeah, here too. We have a lot of wind, but I love it. I love wind.
Cool. And Thomas, can you hear us?
Yes, hi everyone. I can hear you. I'm Ed. I'm Madonna.
Hi,
Hello.
Thomas.
Awesome.
So
Alrighty, well,
can you hear me
go
too?
ahead.
Can you hear me too?
Yeah, loud and
Ah,
clear.
okay, perfect. Perfect. So I'm really glad to be
Yeah,
here. Thanks for inviting me.
we're so excited to have you on and to talk about Jetpack Compose and your new book that's coming out and anything that anyone who wants to listen to wants to come up and ask questions about too, but I assume most of these are going to be about Compose.
Let's see what the audience has in stock. I tried to prepare as good as I can, but I'm excited to hear all those questions. Hopefully, I can answer some of them.
I think one thing that I'm going to say is you got this, Thomas. I think you're pretty awesome. You got this.
Thanks very much.
All right. So wow, already some people are coming up to request, but before we do that, Thomas, do you want to just give a little bit of an introduction to yourself and the book that you have coming out and anything else you want to cover?
Gladly. Actually, I've been in the programming business for more than 20 years. I started my professional career as a programmer using the C programming language at the German authorities. But fortunately, they soon adopted Java, and that's when I became a Java enterprise developer in the early 2000s. And fortunately, this prepared me for Android because when Android appeared in Germany, it was January 2009, I think. I quickly jumped onto Android because I knew Java as a programming language and I was always very interested in doing things with mobile devices. So I bought the G1 and started doing small apps, and here we go.
Oh, that's awesome. The G1 was such a great phone.
Yeah, I mean, if we compare it to the iPhone as it was in 2009, the G1 certainly lacked quite a few things, but nonetheless, it was a very awesome device. And what I particularly liked about it was the physical keyboard. It was really nice to use. And actually, I'm a bit sad that physical keyboards did not gain that traction in the long run.
Yeah, I guess it's just easier to not have that many moving parts.
Yeah, right.
We're seeing a bit of a comeback with foldables and moving parts on phones, but totally different.
I mean, there has been BlackBerry who also did a couple of Android devices, but fortunately they did not sell too well. So, well, let's see what the future brings. Anyway, like you see, composable foldable devices are an exciting device category, and I bought one myself, so it's always nice to have some gadgets to play around with. Probably that's why I used to look at JetPack Compose as a new programming model as well. So always fun to try.
Oh, cool. I have seen some of your articles around too about foldables, so maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit too. But can you tell us a bit more about the book and Jetpack Compose that you are releasing, I think, next week?
Yes, sure. About a year ago, a publisher approached me if I wanted to write a book about Jetpack Compose. This may have been because earlier I did quite a lot of articles about Compose preview versions, which had appeared in the second half of 2020. And you may have seen this, I had quite a few articles on DevTools about it, and apparently they quite liked what I did, and they asked me if I wanted to do a Jetpack Compose book. And as Compose had been teased as the new preferred UI toolkit for Android, I was particularly interested in learning how it works and learning about its nuts and bolts. And so I said, yes, gladly, I'd like to write this book. The book is roughly about 250 pages. It's 11 chapters. And what I try to do is explain Jetpack Compose to the Android developer. That means developers who already have been using Android, who already have experience in using the Android view system. So I'm focusing completely on Jetpack Compose, which was nice because it leaves some room to go at least a little deeper. To explain what I mean by this, you may have seen that I have been doing a German book about Android development. The first edition of this appeared in 2011. And this book in its latest edition has more than 640 pages, but I am describing quite a lot of aspects of Android. So it leaves not that much room for an individual topic. So having 200 pages available for writing about Compose allowed me to dig a little deeper and sometimes unwrap the cover and not only explain how composables work, but also explain a little how the inner workings are. And I think this is important for the reader to understand how to benefit from Jetpack Compose and how to use it as it is intended by Google.
That's awesome. Cool. So I can just start us off with some questions, but before that, just want to encourage anyone who wants to come up and ask questions to Thomas, either about Compose or Android in general. He is very experienced, and I'm sure we'll have some excellent answers. So please come up and speak. If you don't want to speak today, send a DM to me or Madonna, and we can ask for you, or reply in one of the Twitter space tweets, and we'll get back to you and ask your question. So yeah, to start off, I just want to know your favorite thing about Jetpack Compose.
That's a very interesting question. And actually, I think it's the declarative approach. I mean, we all have been using the Android view system quite successfully for more than 10 years, and we know how to handle it, and we know how to build nice apps with the view system. But the imperative approach has its issues, and it has its problems, and the declarative approach as a new approach allows us to overcome quite a lot of these disadvantages of the imperative programming model. So what do I mean by this? Managing the state of the UI has been notoriously difficult using the traditional imperative approach. We haven't seen this only in Android. We have seen this in practically any other UI toolkit, which is based upon the imperative approach. So we all had our issues figuring out how to update the UI when app data changes and things like that. And here the declarative approach just shines. It makes things so much easier, and it's just fun writing apps that always reflect the state of the app data, which has been notoriously difficult using the imperative approach. So that's probably what I like the most about JetPick Compose. What I also quite love is the fact that we have pure Kotlin functions, which gives us a lot of elegance regarding the structure of our code. I mean, there's a lot going on under the hood. As you know, we need to annotate our functions, but seeing a more functional approach while writing our user interfaces is very nice, and it allows us to solve problems more elegantly than we could solve them using object-oriented model like we have with the Android view system.
Cool. So I haven't been able to play too much with Compose, but part of the interest that I have in it is the ability to define the views as Kotlin functions and organize your file structure in the same directory as all your other code. But how do you have any like recommendations for how to best sort or organize those composables and potentially the previews alongside them?
I think it depends on the overall structure of your app. It's, if the app is a little bigger, you will probably have domain-specific modules or parts. So I would try to organize my composables that they are cleanly separated from other functional parts of the app. Think of an app that has 3, 4, or 5 primary destinations between which you would toggle with, for example, a bottom navigation. Then I would probably arrange my composables regarding the primary destination, so that I know if I'm using this particular composable, I'm in the pick people or map or whatever destination. So I would try to organize the composables by its domain relation, to put it this way.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds good. I guess it does really depend per project and how that is structured. Before, it was just like all your XML views are thrown in a resource directory and are referred to. So
I mean, we shouldn't forget we would have had the opportunity, the possibility to structure our XML based layout using things like merge or include tags, but for whatever reason, this did never take off. I mean, we all had these huge layout files which just had everything that we wanted to display, but to some extent, we would have been able to structure our layout files into more manageable parts using XML2, but I by myself too did not do it, but it would have been possible, but for whatever reason, it never took off. But like you say, it's more easy to do it using Jetpack Compose because it comes naturally. I mean, if we structure our app certain source files that represent composables matching different destinations, it's easy to see where they belong. And to some extent, we get some structure by using navigation for Compose because they have the notion of a screen, which is something like a top-level composable, which is being the destination of a navigation. So here we have some sort of simple or basic structure, which helps us arrange and helps us group or structure our composables.
Very cool. Madonna, how are you doing? Can we hear you?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Thomas, you're doing pretty great, and I love that. I think I had one question. And this question, it's in regards to testing. I know before we would do espresso tests for our XML views, and then we would put it on the Android test package. I just want to hear what you think about testing in Jetpack Compose, mm-hmm. and what you would recommend.
Actually, I think we are experiencing some sort of shift in paradigm. When we wanted to test old style Android views, we very often needed to access properties of those views. For example, we wanted to see if the background color of one of our views has been properly set to black, or if the text in a text view has been properly set to Hello World and things like that. And the approach in Jetpack Compose is more to rely on what's called the semantics tree, which essentially structures the information that is displayed by a composable hierarchy. And we should no longer focus on have particular values like colors or text, have they been set properly, but we should focus on is the actual state that is presented or displayed by a particular composable, is that state correct? So in a way, we are changing what we are actually testing. So we will probably be moving away from testing properties more into a direction like is the state of the app as we would expect it? Because if we know that if the state is right, then that value is going to be displayed. So we may depend a little more, a little less on really testing how a view is configured and rely a little more on is our actual data correct or is it the way we want it to be?
Thank you very much for answering that. It was quite insightful to hear that. I have a follow-up question. And my follow-up question is, in your book, do you mention this? Do you address this? Because I think I would like to get it based on this.
Yeah,
it sounds awesome.
Actually, there's a complete chapter about testing, and that particular chapter discusses the semantics tree. And actually, I also show some of the differences compared to the traditional Android view system, because I think this is some kind of paradigm shift developers need to grasp to fully appreciate testing in Compose. So, like I said, it's a complete chapter.
Oh, thank you very much, Thomas. We appreciate you for doing this for the community. Matt, back at you.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Very cool. If anything sounds super complicated, I know Thomas goes through the book and explains this very well. So definitely look for that when it comes out next week. It's going to really help you when you're learning. I've been able to read it and it's really excellent. It starts at ground zero and moves through some pretty complex aspects of Jetpack Compose. But also, anyone who wants to come up and ask a question, please do. We are getting a couple questions.
Yeah, the question that I found pretty interesting. Maybe you can read it.
Okay, go ahead. Oh, I can grab it real quick. All right, so one question in DMs is, where do you keep state in your composables?
I think this is going to take a little longer to explain. I think we should start by thinking about what state actually is. Google has a quite nice but a little broad answer. I mean, generally speaking, state is app data that may change over time. So in a way, we need to clarify a little more which type of data we mean. I mean, if we look at traditional Android apps, we fortunately got the view models with the architecture components a couple of years back. And so the view model does store app data, and it does store app data this which is in some way presented by the view hierarchy. And we probably, no, not probably, we should continue to use view models in our Compose applications. And we should use the Compose state as a means to store data that is needed or used by a particular composable function. What I mean by that, if you look at a composable that displays and receives text, the user input, so we need to pass an area and a container possibility to the composable function, which can store the text that is going to be displayed and which is going to be altered if the user types in another text. So for this reason, we do need compose state, but at some point in time, for example, if the user moves the focus to another text field or does something else, we probably want to transfer the data into the view model. So like I said, in a way, state occurs on different levels. One level is the view model, which is in a way more sustaining than the state that is used by composable functions. But to actually use and to actually work with composables, we need to use compose state as well. Now, I'm not sure if I answered the question or if my answer was too complicated. Maybe we can dig a little deeper into this if I didn't answer correctly or satisfactory, to put it this way.
Sure. Well, I mean, state's always a complicated topic, so I think it's a little challenging to address in an audio-only format where you can't necessarily show examples. But speaking of examples, the book comes with a bunch of code samples, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Each chapter has something between 2 to 5 sample apps, and most of the sample apps focus on one particular aspect. So what I did not want to do is have one large app which shows a lot of different topics, because I found it difficult as a reader to maintain what the author of a book wanted to show me at a particular moment. So I found it more easy to follow if we have apps that clearly focus on one aspect. So what I mean by this is, if I'm going to show how state works, I have an app that's called State Demo. And if I have an app that shows how navigation in Compose works, I have something that's called Navigation Demo. So by looking at the samples, you get an idea what the sample app is about.
That's awesome. And I'm pretty sure they're all hosted on GitHub, so that you can follow along and clone them to your own project and play around.
Yeah, absolutely. This was one important thing to me, to have the complete source code available as open source, so everyone can take a look at it, even if he or she doesn't want to read the book. I mean, to some extent, the examples are self-explanatory, so you can even get a nice understanding of quite a few aspects of ChatGPT Compose by just looking at my sample apps without the need to actually buy or read the book.
Wow, that's amazing. And I just want to say that Mike Wolfson was the one who sent me this question, and he just came up to speak, so I will pass the mic over to him.
Gladly. Hi, Mike.
Can you hear us, Mike? All right, I'm going to assume Twitter is having a little issue, but until we can hear from Mike, we do have some other questions coming in. We'll get to those in a second. I just want to call out that we are doing a giveaway for some versions of Thomas's book today. I pinned a tweet at the top where if you can follow Thomas and reply to that tweet with Thomas's favorite dessert, we'll do a little raffle for some giveaways of the book. There will be some hard copies and some digital copies depending on where you are in the world. So please, you know, send us, what's your favorite dessert?
It's cheesecake.
Thomas? All right. Heard it here first.
I like this spot.
Cool. Yeah, I figured the desserts would be fun since Android used to be named after desserts, and tiramisu is making the rounds right now.
I was a little bit sad that one of the first Android versions was called Cupcake. I would have appreciated if it would have been Cheesecake, but nonetheless, Cupcake was a nice version. So.
That was the first dessert name too. Very cool. All right, so another question coming in. Does the book also touch on integrating Compose with existing Android architecture components like Room, ViewModels, Work Manager, and Android Views themselves? Or is it just about Compose?
It focuses on Jetpack Compose. I have some minor areas where I target other architecture component stuff. That's the part where I am using a view model and I'm having two pretty simple repository examples. But overall, the book focuses on Jetpack Compose. I mean, there is a lot of things we need to talk about when thinking about how to integrate Jetpack Compose into the larger Android ecosystem, communicating with other Jetpack components. But I think this is worth another book. And if I'm not mistaken, there is one underway. Maybe the one who's writing it is currently listening. So maybe he wants to give a brief hello and say something about his book. But I'm not sure if he's online. So let's just see if someone raises his hand.
Cool. And then Mike just joined us again, I think. So can you hear us, Mike? Can we hear you?
I think so. I can hear you. So
oh, yep.
It's all good. What I was saying, first of all, is I also got an advanced copy of the book, and I agree with Matt's feedback that it is thorough, but also goes into some complex aspects of Compose. I think integrating with Compose, you would mostly do in the view model. You know, as you described, I think that's the integration point for Compose. Yeah. And that's pretty much, you know, the universal, regardless of the view system. That's my opinion. But my question for Thomas, and I will listen to it offline, is I know there's lots of different frameworks for sharing state, like Mobius is one, and then Square. I can't remember the name of that one, but Matt,
Molecule.
You know that? What's
Molecule.
It called? Yeah, Molecule. Thomas, do you have any opinions on like the state sharing frameworks and if you should use them? Or obviously, we don't need to worry about our sponsor.
Actually, I'm afraid I've got a very unpopular opinion. If it isn't absolutely necessary, I would probably not use any additional framework. I would try to stick to the things we get from Google using either the core Android framework or using the libraries that are part of Jetpack. Because even when restricting ourselves to those, there is so much to learn for us as a developer, and putting in yet another ingredient can make things rather difficult to maintain, especially if the developers are not yet too experienced and if they do not know the libraries in question really well. So actually, if I don't absolutely have to, I wouldn't use any additional state handling library, but stick to the things that come from Google, come from Jetpack ecosystem. But I know that's an unpopular opinion, I'm afraid. So sorry to those who like using additional frameworks.
There's always a trade-off. Sometimes it really makes a lot of sense. Sometimes it doesn't. It depends on how much of it that you want to have control over.
Yeah, I think what Matthew said is what I would have said too, that it's a trade-off. And I think what Thomas said, it's also a learning curve too. So, yep.
The one thing that makes me lean towards using a framework is for some of the collisions you can have, like in the reducer. I know Rebecca Frank wrote an article, a really good article about some of the experience they had when multiple events came back to change the single state. I feel like some of those things may be, hopefully might be served by a framework instead of homegrown.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with this one. Probably it's like I said, if we figure out that we just need one to really handle complexity, yes, sure, go for it. So in a way, it probably matters how big the app is. And if we are talking about a completely new app, or if we are talking about migrating an existing app to Jetpack Compose, then we probably will have the library in the app already, so it's there. So we can make the best of it.
Very cool. Ken, you came up and joined us. How are you today?
Very good. Very good. So, I had a question for Thomas. It kind of partially answered, but what I wanted to know is that whether you have explained more on like modularization, using modularization in Jetpack Compose, and even in features like using data, database ingestion in Compose. Thank you.
I'm afraid I didn't fully get the question because there was a lot of disturbance during the question was answered. So what I understood it was about modularization and how this is supported by Jetpack Compose. Actually, my book has rather small examples, and all these examples are in one app module, like most of the sample apps are. So I do not focus on modularization. The only thing I describe in the book is to some extent how to separate functionality using navigation and screens, but I do not go deeper into how modularization is handled. And to be quite frank here, I haven't looked deeper into this. So I'm sorry to say that I can't really answer the question what best practices with this regard would be. Oh, sorry for that.
Yeah, that's totally okay. It was hard to hear the whole depth of the question anyway, so hopefully they can rejoin us and maybe provide some clarification, or just send me a message and I can ask for you if you still have some audio troubles. But until then, let's see, Sriharsha, how are you today?
Hi, Matt. I'm actually doing pretty good. Just been wondering about this question. But first of all, I'd like to thank you for organizing this space, and thanks for bringing Thomas here. I'm kind of like excited to read his book in the future once it comes available next week. And hi, Thomas. This question is kind of like regarding Compose, especially onto the performance part. I've been hearing about Compose, this thing that nesting layouts isn't an issue in Compose, since Compose views aren't real views but are rendered in the Compose view. But I'm not sure like how it actually works that way. In order to like figure out why that happens, I created a simple composable myself, a simple APK, which has just a column and has just two text elements in it. And I tried decompiling it. And when I decompiled, I actually saw calls to create scope something on the Composer instance in the decompiled code. So I'm kind of like wondering now, as in, because scopes still exist here, and if that text changes in future, the layout has to change. I'm wondering like how nesting layouts won't be an issue in Compose. Like any insights onto this would be great, especially if you can recommend me like how I can dig a little bit deeper into this. That would be like pretty much great.
Again, I'm afraid I need to apologize. There was quite some disturbance in the transmission, so I didn't completely get the question. So maybe could you rephrase the key elements of your question? So you were trying to use an XML view in a composable, or the other way around?
No, it's not about XML or composable. I think okay. First of all, I hope I'm audible right now.
At the moment, it sounds clear.
Okay. Okay. Cool. So, what I have been hearing is that nesting layouts is not an issue in Compo because they are.
Yeah.
So. So like what I did in order to figure out why that is the case, I created my own APK, which just had a column composable and which had two text composables in it. And I saw when I decompiled, there are a few calls like create scope something on the composer instance in the decompiled code. So now I'm wondering why this is exactly the case, why compose is being said as nesting layouts won't be causing a performance issue there. So any insights into that would
okay.
be great.
So first apologies for not getting the question previously, but now I understood. Actually the explanation is a difference in how repainting and layouting in general is done in the Android view system versus in Jetpack Compose. If you look at the Android view system, depending on how your layout was structured, parts of the layout may be calculated or measured several times, up to three times, I think. And especially for complex layouts, this can cause quite a few delays, whereas Jetpack Compose has a thing called a single measure pass, which basically means that Jetpack Compose is looking at your composable hierarchy and it measures, which means it calculates the positions and sizes of all your composables exactly once. So it's to answer your question, it's a difference in architecture that makes nested layouts way less problematic in Jetpack Compose than it used to be in the old Android view system. Because the way the layout process works is simply more efficient in Compose.
Which is amazing, right? And is that some of the reason why we don't need things like recycler view? It's because the lazy column doesn't need to do the recycling because of this efficiency?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there is one other optimization. The lazy column looks ahead, so to speak, and just recomposes only the items that are visible, but generally speaking, the architecture of Compose is much more efficient here. I mean, the old Android view system had to recalculate, remeasure its children because they formed real hierarchies on a component level, and here Compose works differently too. I mean, there is a runtime representation of our composables which may form hierarchies, but to us as a developer it doesn't matter. And the reason we don't need to bother is because Compose handles quite a lot of these hierarchies internally, so it can optimize them on the go.
That's awesome. Does that answer your question, Sriharsha?
Yes, definitely. Now, after this, I'm definitely excited to try to go through the architecture, try to learn a bit more about composable. So thanks a lot, Thomas, for the
My pleasure. It was great you joined. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for coming up and asking a question. I want to encourage anyone else who has a question, please come up. But we do have a bunch of questions coming in. I just got one in a DM that says, how do you make sure your team is ready to use it? How do you work on training a team to transition from the XML way of thinking and the to a declarative way of thinking?
Oh, that's a very interesting yet a very tough question. I think it depends on how experienced the teammates are. What we have been doing at my employer is we have regular design hours, which is where the team just sits down and picks various aspects of Compose, and someone has the job of explaining a particular mechanism or a particular way of doing things to others. And so it's a lot of sharing knowledge by asking one of the teammates to present a particular topic to the others. And after that, we discuss about the topic. And in my experience, this leads to a deeper understanding because the team, in a way, continuously discusses various aspects. But generally speaking, if you have very experienced Android developers who have been doing apps for quite a long time, I think the most important thing is to grasp the difference between imperative and declarative approaches. In a matter, it's not that important if we are talking about Jetpack Compose or Flutter or Swift UI. We need to grasp the differences between imperative UI toolkits and declarative UI frameworks on a more architectural or conceptual way. And the first thing to achieve this is, at least that is what I'm trying to achieve in my book, is to recap how imperative UI toolkits work. I mean, we all know they are component based, and mostly these components are reflected by class hierarchies, and each class has a set of properties. And by going from general versions of a class to more specialized version of a class, we get the features we know from that UI toolkit. And this is not how the declarative approach works. And I think it is very important to grasp this fundamental difference. And then if you've seen how this works, by not maintaining a component or object graph during runtime, but instead saying how the user interface is expected to be at a particular point in time, if the developer has grasped this, acquainting themselves to the particular composables is way easier. But now I'm not sure if I answered the question.
Yeah, I definitely think you answered the question. It's another very complicated question, but it'll depend on the team. I think you forgot one part, though, where you could buy the team your book.
Yeah. or any other book about Jetpack Compose. I mean, I'm more than happy than that we are talking about my book right now. But actually, I'd like to say this. I think probably my publisher would love if I said some fancy words about why it needs to be my book. Of course, I'm very happy if many people read my book. But the point is to really get to know a framework, you probably should listen to many different voices. I mean, each author has a particular way of describing things. And I think to really grasp a technology, it's important to hear different ways of explaining things. I mean, way back in the old days of Android, Google's Android documentation was, sorry to say so, pretty poor. But in recent years, Google has really done an incredible job in explaining the Jetpack library, explaining Compose. I mean, it's really fun to go to Google, to go through Google's Code Labs and read their documentation. But all these documents are written in a certain, in a particular style, and a lot of people probably like this style, but other people might say it's too verbose, or it's not verbose enough, or you know where I'd like to go. And so probably people should be reading at least two or three books about Jetpack Compose to get different opinions about how things work. And only then you probably get a true understanding of the concepts and ideas behind. So go buy my book, but please buy the books of other authors as well.
Yeah, wow. Spoken like a true gentleman and true educator as well.
Thanks.
Madonna, I want to check in with you. How are you? Do you have any questions before we move on to some more?
Yes, and this is to move a little bit into like what goes into book publishing. And this is for anybody here who might want to either publish a book in the future or might want to do something similar. And I was wondering, Thomas, do you mind sharing your experience, how this was, what were the challenges, and how you overcame them, and what you would advise?
Thanks very much, Madonna, for this question. This is an awesome question. I think writing a book is a very personal thing. In many ways, it expresses how you work, how you act, how you are as a character, as a person. I'm fortunate of having been writing books for, let me think, about 15 years. I mean, my first German book appeared in 2006, which was about something called Java for Windows. And by that time, our industry was different. I mean, I got to know my German publisher, and we sat together and discussed what the book would be going to be about. And then I had, I think, 6 or 7 months time. I wrote the manuscript and sent it to the publisher, but there was no apparent feedback during the writing process. And this is how I have been doing my books until now, because it's just the way the publisher worked. So you have an idea for a book, you discuss it, you do a contract, and then you have some time, and then you write the book, which is awesome because it leaves you quite a lot of freedom. It leaves you quite a lot of space how you organize your work. I mean, all of my books have been written in my spare time, which means I needed to find a balance between doing the regular job, spending enough time with the family, which is very important, and actually taking some time to write the book. And this is probably the most difficult part, to learn how many pages or how many things you can do in some amount of time. For example, I learned that I cannot write for more than 2 hours a day, sometimes less. But if you know that you can write for only 2 hours a day, it means that, well, if the book is expected to be about 300 or 400 pages, you need to give yourself some schedule, because otherwise you will have half the book ready when the time is run out. So it takes quite a lot of planning to actually do this. And my advice to new authors would be to never overestimate your capabilities. I mean, if someone tells you, "Hey, you've got 6 months to write a book," then probably many people are say, "Ah, this is quite a long time. I can handle it, but it turns out you need to find out how many pages you can write in 1 hour or in 2 hours, and then you will probably see that 5 or 6 months will have been passed very soon. So setting yourself goals and setting yourself a reliable schedule is probably the most challenging thing when writing a book.
Thank you very much, Thomas, for sharing that with us. I feel like I've learned a lot from your experience, and definitely will take that to my notes. I also love the fact that we're recording this, so we'll just share with other people who did not attend today. And otherwise, if you're not following Thomas, please go ahead and follow him. He's amazing. And also his book is almost coming out and we need to pre-order. Matt.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, are you planning on writing a book, Madonna?
Yeah, I am. And cool. I'm thinking I just got a mentor.
I'd be more than happy to, Madonna. Please get in touch with me whenever you like. I'd be more than happy to try to help. And there already might be a publisher who might be interested, so just let's keep talking about this.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And that's the power of the community. I love that. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah, that's awesome. I do want to say we only have Thomas for around 10 more minutes before he has to go. So I'm going to focus on the speakers who want to come up and ask some questions. I know there are some questions that were asked in the thread that was posted, and maybe Thomas, when he has a chance, can go through and answer those with tweets. So thank you for understanding, and we will move on to Apsol.
Thank you, Matt. First of all, thanks for organizing this every week. It's very informative. My question for Thomas is, if someone is looking into contributing to the Compose runtime or the Compose compiler, would you recommend a place to start digging into the code or a resource that would help with that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. While I was acquainting myself with Compose, I constantly looked and peeked into the source code of Compose. I countlessly set breakpoints and debugged and inspected the data structures, and it gave me quite a lot of insights how Compose works internally, and I think this is very important. But what I'd like to say, there is an incredible book by Jorge Castillo. It's called Compose Internals. And anyone who is interested in going way deeper into Compose than my book is offering, so go grab Jorge's book. It's a very interesting read and it's very worthwhile read. So go ahead, grab it.
Thank you.
Cool. I just pinned a tweet that has the link to that Compose Internals book. But yeah, thanks for coming up and asking, Afsel. And next, we have Karan. How are you doing today?
Yes, I'm doing good. Thank you for the opportunity. Am I audible? Can you hear me clearly? Can you guys hear me clearly?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, good. So yes, so I am fairly new to Android development, and so my goal, I have myself a goal to make to publish a simple shopping cart application for a custom requirement. So the challenge for me is that I have to learn Android architecture completely, means new model data rounding. So how much importance should I give to Compose? I mean, if I do not use it, what will I be missing out on if I do not use it? And also, if I use it, what will I gain? That's a first time goal to publish an app.
So the question is, what are the benefits of using Compose, or what do you miss out on if you don't use Compose?
Oh, that's it.
Yes, yes. Because I have to learn the Android architecture also. So, so if I can just not use it and not miss out, then is that possible?
That's a very interesting question. I mean, how should I put it? The marketing answer is, Google is saying that Jetpack Compose is the new preferred UI toolkit for Android, and we are supposed or encouraged to use Jetpack Compose for any new app we are writing. So you probably should be using it by now if we are planning to write a new app. If, however, you have an already existing app which makes use of the old Android View system, there may be a little more time to acquaint yourself with Jetpack Compose. I mean, Jetpack Compose is the future. I think that the old View system will never go away completely. So this means for a developer that we need to be versed in both technologies, but I predict that Jetpack Compose is getting more and more ground in the next months and years. So if you haven't done so already, please do acquaint yourself with Jetpack Compose. But on the other hand, there's no rush. I mean, Jetpack Compose is now stable. We have Compose 1.1 as a stable version, but nonetheless, Compose and its accompanying libraries is continuously evolving. So it probably won't hurt if you wait a little more months, but eventually you need to familiarize yourself with it because it's the future, and most employers will surely demand solid knowledge of Compose in the next months and years.
Awesome. It's also interoperable with the standard Android views, so that's going to help with transitions and the period of the XML views that still exist. Yes. For a while. They're going to be around. Yes. For some time.
I mean, part of the Android framework still heavily relies on views and XML-based layouts. I mean, if you look at an activity is rather deeply tied to the view system. So Google needed to make sure that a very solid interoperability layer is part of Jetpack Compose, and actually there is. If we want to integrate Android views into the composable worlds, we can, for example, use the Android view or Android view binding composable. And if we want to go the other route, meaning we have an existing app that is using Android views and we want to start embracing Compose by writing a couple of composables, we can include them using the Compose view. So there's a really solid and really excellent interoperability API, which really eases the period of transition. So both worlds interact really nicely. And maybe one more suggestion. Of course, Android views and composables in a way need to exchange data. And my suggestion would be to, whenever possible, use view models as a synchronization point between composables and old classic views.
All right. Does that answer your question, Karan?
So if I don't use Compose, will I miss out on anything as a first project? Because I'm trying to do my first Android project. So I already have my hands on learning the architecture and practicing the architecture. So if I don't, will I get some loss or will I be wrong about it? And I can get a.
You're breaking up a little bit, but I think the main point was if you don't use Compose, do you miss out on anything?
That's
yes.
I'm afraid that's a little bit difficult to answer. Yes, you probably will be missing out about quite a lot because I predict and many others predict that Compose is the future. So in a way, you at some point in time, you probably will be losing contact to current Android development. So it's not that something is not possible in the old Android view system, which will be possible in Compose. I mean, that's not the issue. I'm just thinking the Android ecosystem has always been very fast paced. I mean, we've seen cycles of innovations more like months than years. And I'm afraid that the Android developer community in 2 or 3 years will rely on composables by more than 99%. So there probably is no choice but to, in a way, embrace composables.
And I think another key part of this was that it's your first project. So I don't think there's any reason to not use Compose instead of the standard Android views, especially if you're learning it for the first time. Eventually, I think you should become familiar with the XML version of doing views just so that you can be comfortable when you do have to come across them at some point in some older projects. If you have like an employer or something that has a year, multi-year long app, but yeah, nothing wrong starting with Compose as far as I know. And Thomas is confirming that.
I mean, in a way, Compose is more fun. I mean, getting to know the Android view system may take some time to be able to build a little more complex user interfaces. And my personal experience has been that achieving the same with Jetpack Compose is way more easy. I mean, Compose has its obstacles too, but the overall experience of a declarative UI framework to me seems much more smooth and in a way more easy to understand and grasp what's going on. So I would give it a try and see for yourself.
All right, and we have one more speaker up here. So again, just want to quick apologize to all the questions that were sent that we did not get to answer, but maybe Thomas can answer them later, or maybe we just have to have Thomas on as a guest again.
Anytime. And also, I had one thing to say. Sorry, Karan, for muting you. I did notice that your audio was pretty tough. And I think sometimes we can just text a question if our audios are not working pretty well, because it can be hard to hear the other person.
All right. For our last question, Goody Will, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks, Matt, for giving me the opportunity to ask Mr. Thomas. I have like three questions. First of all, I would like to know if for me, who came from Flutter, and I'm trying to transition from Flutter to native Android development. So for the meantime, I found XML to be a bit difficult for me to pick up. So when I check up and I found Jetpack Compose, I think it's a bit easier because it's somehow related to Flutter and the Flutter layouts. So I would like to know if I will only concentrate on Jetpack Compose and skip the XML part, I'll be able to land my job, or marketable. So that is my first question.
Okay. With regard to creating the user interfaces, you probably won't need to look at XML at all. I mean, it's awesome that you mentioned Flutter, because in a way, Flutter and Jetpack Compose have a lot in common, meaning that both are declarative UI frameworks. So as you already grasped, the concepts behind the declarative approach. As you mastered Flutter, you already know how Compose works. I mean, there are some differences because the Flutter widgets are implemented as a hierarchy of classes, whereas Jetpack Compose relies on Kotlin functions, which is a small conceptual difference you need to be aware of. But generally speaking, the transition from Flutter to Jetpack Compose should be way easier than from Flutter to XML-based Fuse. But having said that, the old XML-based Fuse in Android will never go away completely. So at some point in time, it probably is a good idea to familiarize yourself with them, but it's definitely not necessary to start a Jetpack Compose app.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Thomas. And my second question is Jetpack Compose ready for production? I mean, it has a stable version because, it has a stable version, I would like to know if there is any application which built in Jetpack Compose.
The first part of your question, yes, I think Jetpack Compose is production ready. It's not only because Google is claiming so. Many companies have already adopted Jetpack Compose and brought their apps to Compose. Actually, I cannot give you examples here, but we hear quite a lot of success stories with bigger companies saying we migrated our complete app or we migrated parts of our app to Jetpack Compose and this worked quite nicely. So we can safely say that Jetpack Compose is production ready. On the other hand, like all Jetpack components, Compose 2 is continuously evolving, so there may be some things that will change in the near future, but that doesn't mean it's not production ready, so you should give it a try, probably.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Thomas. That was all for the day.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks for coming up and asking those questions. And just want to say a huge thank you to Thomas for joining us. And if everyone wants to quick hit the React button and that new clap emoji to have a round of applause. Thanks so much for joining us. And I know you have to get going. So really, everyone go check out the book and reach out to Thomas if you have any questions. Is there anything that you want to leave us with before we go?
Thomas, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, yep, we can hear you.
I'm sorry, it turns out my mic muted itself. So no, I'd like to say thanks very much for having me. It was great fun answering all those questions, and I hope I could answer them all to the satisfaction of the folks who asked them. Like I said, I really enjoyed being here. And again, thanks very much for having me, and it's been a great time. And as in my country, it's evening, so happy evening or have a nice day, depending on where you are right now. So thanks very much, and goodbye.
Yeah, thank you very much, Thomas, for coming today and for presenting and answering our questions and for sharing also your book with us. We appreciate that very much. And please, if you're not following him, please go ahead and do that and stay connected to Thomas.
All righty. Thanks so much for joining, everyone. We're going to be ending the space now.